Welcome to Maxed Out Man, helping you become the man you were made to be.
Hey guys, it's Kevin Davis from the Maxed Out Man podcast. This is episode number 52. I'm here today with Jonathan Roslin, who is an adventuring philosopher, pompous pontificator, writer, case-selected, biohacker, tantric husband, raconteur. I don't know if that's the right way to say that, and smart drug dealer. So Jonathan and I connected a little bit ago. I'm super excited to have him here talking about biohacking and nootropics and a ton of different stuff. Make sure you stick around towards the end of the podcast because Jonathan has some great information and some thoughts on kind of why now is the best time to be a man, which is, you know, exactly why we're here. So, hey, Jonathan, thanks so much for joining me, man. I appreciate it.
Sure thing. Sure thing. I was today just listening to a bunch of your different podcasts, and the DIE, the diversity, equity, inclusion guy, he didn't quite sell me. He didn't quite sell me whatever he was selling.
But, I kind of picked up on the belonging part of that. You know, the belonging part of it seemed to resonate with me. But yeah, that was an interesting thing for me. And I think I said in the podcast, a lot of these conversations, I mean, just like you, we're sitting here talking about biohacking and the like. You're in the Balkans. I'm in the middle of Montana, in rural Montana. So like we're, you know, these are great conversations to have and learn from each other, I think. But yeah, so thanks for coming. Why don't you give us kind of your background? I always like to set the stage with these podcasts on who it is we're talking to so that then we, you know, not from a credibility standpoint, just from a basic interest standpoint.
Sure. So about biohacking, this is something that I have been traveling down the path of obsession towards the Palace of Wisdom for about 12 years now. And what first really grabbed my attention with this was a gray Maserati. And it was in the movie Limitless with Bradley Cooper. Do you remember that movie?
I do remember that movie. I watched it again not too long ago. I'm basically obsessed with any movie. I don't typically watch many movies after like 2010. So I go back and watch all these older movies. And that Limitless may have been more recent than that. But anyway, gray Maserati.
And that gray Maserati, I used to drive that car. A long, long time ago, I got myself into kind of this insane situation with a startup company with this. I got involved with the entertainment business and I met this kind of crazy guy. And then he met this older financier who had multiple personality dissociative disorder. And so he was very wealthy and unhinged, which made for a really crazy little episode of my life. And we ended up purchasing a brand new gray Maserati Gran Turismo with red leather seats. Ooh, that was a sexy car.
Yeah. And
that was my car for a little while. And then this whole company melted down and I ended up living back at mom's house. And my sister showed me the trailer of the Limitless movie, which features that car. And I said, okay, I must watch this movie. And in the movie, he takes this clear pill, NZT-48, and it just unlocks every recess of his mind and his memory and his cognitive capabilities. And he experiences this rapid transformation. And I watched that movie and I said, there's got to be something out there, the pharmaceutical world that approaches that. And I have to find it. And since then, I've experimented. That was about 12 years ago. So I've experimented very thoroughly with over 200 different smart drugs and nootropics, and it's taken me on a pretty wild odyssey of becoming a digital nomad and living in 6 or 7 different countries now. And it's taken me also through this ideological, philosophical journey as well of kind of being kind of a scumbag, promiscuous kind of guy, an agnostic, an atheist, to eventually now. And now I'm a family man and a Christian. And all the biohacking things that I've done, all of those smart drugs, and a bunch of other things that I've experimented with have drawn me to a place in life that I feel like I'm really well aligned with my deep principles and with the way that I live my life on a day-to-day basis. And so that's why I call myself the internet's smart drug dealer, because I think it is one of these things that can have a multiplicative effect of giving us the power and the motivation and the focus that we need to become the men that we are called to be.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. So you went through that journey of doing learning how to do biohacking. That actually, now is that like because different people talk about nootropics and psychedelics and those kind of things that kind of open their mind and lead them towards, you know, more enlightenment and some of those kinds of things. I'm a Christian as well, so I'm not like I tend to lean away from the what I call the woo-woo, but mm-hmm. they talk about, you know, psychedelics and those kind of things. Is that kind of part of that journey and how that went?
Okay, I did psychedelics once in a ceremony in the Andes Mountains, and it was an experience that I don't regret. There was it was an interesting cultural experience, but it resulted in zero helpful epiphanies for me. There was a little bit of a pretty geometric hallucinatory light show that it produced on the back of my eyelids, but things like meditation and reading good books and some transformative meditation techniques that I've used have been there's been no comparison. So I'm not that big of a fan of psychedelics as a transformative tool. Joe Rogan did a tremendous job of popularizing psychedelics, but after I did my ayahuasca trip, I looked more deeply into the science on it. And psychedelics do hack your personality, and not just when you are on the psychedelics. What they do, and this was according to a study out of Barcelona, is they increase the personality trait of openness, which is sort of a good thing of being open to new things and people and experiences. But what they also do is they decrease risk aversion pretty dramatically in your personality. And that's even after you go off of them. Mm. And so to me, that kind of seems like a bad combination of increasing openness and risk taking, but then decreasing risk assessment capability. So psychedelics are really far from the list of things that I recommend to people when they're looking at the huge array of transformational tools that are out there.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I would recommend someone being super open to new experiences with very little risk aversion. That's a good way to end up with no parachute jumping out of an airplane just to see what happens.
Yeah.
So Can you just take a step back and just define what biohacking is? That's, you know, people are using it as a buzz term. I've heard, you know, a bunch of different people are talking about it, including Rogan a little bit, but he doesn't actually use that phrase very often. He talks a lot about nootropics, and obviously he has his own sets and all that kind of stuff. But can you give us just, I don't really even understand the concept of biohacking. So can you kind of give us that and talk as long as you want? Give me the full Monty on that.
Sure. So the definition that Dave Asprey gave it is that a hacker is someone that seeks to control whatever system they are dealing with, typically a technological computer system, but it can also be a social system. So a biohacker seeks to control the myriad layers of their biology. And there's a bunch of different tools that are used for this. So there's the things that are kind of obvious, which is a diet and exercise. And most of your listeners are probably already well on their way towards diet optimization and optimizing a way in which they are disciplining their body. And that is, of course, a major hack for brain power, for neuroplasticity, for the capacity of the mind to make new connections so that you can acquire new skills better. And of course, exercise is also a major longevity hack. And I know that you have been a passionate weightlifter for decades and decades and decades. And that shows in your physique and in your what people would perceive as your age. You look pretty good for 51, I think you said.
Yeah. Just turned 51.
So there's those things that are more obvious: diet, exercise, trying to mitigate the toxins that you are consuming. And then there's a whole array of tools that are on the fringe, that are not like in the mainstream. And so that would be all the different tech that is out there. And I've experimented with quite a bit of the tech, and some of it is pretty gimmicky, but some of it really does make a pretty big difference. People are seeing my room glowing red, and that is from the red light lamp that we use. And red light therapy devices are an incredible therapy tool, because they feed the ATP energy generation process in your mitochondria. They feed that a little bit of extra fuel. So doing 10 or 20 minutes of red light therapy a day just feeds your body a little bit more, so that there at that fundamental energy generation level, your body can do more of what it is supposed to do. So we use this one as a lamp in the evenings, because the red light doesn't interrupt our circadian rhythm. So it results in just a whole lot better sleep to use it as a lamp. And then I have another device that I use that will wrap around my body. That one's called the FlexiBeam. And actually, all of these things I'm going to have on a page on my website. It's going to be limitlessmindset.com/maxed out. Yeah. So, okay. People can find all that stuff there. So I use another red light therapy device, and I'll use it on my body after a workout for recovery. I will use it on my hands because I'm an IT nerd. So I'm using my hands all day long. And so I'll use it on my hands to keep carpal tunnel at bay. Anytime I got like a little little bit of pain thing or a little bit of niggling, something going on in my body, I will use it there. And then red light, as you've probably heard of, you use it on your balls. You sit on the red light therapy device and you give your balls anywhere between a couple minutes to maybe up to about 10 minutes because you don't want them to get too hot of red light therapy. And this is going to boost testosterone.
Interesting.
Along with a lot of guys report that it's like a sex hack that increases pleasure. I haven't found that quite so much, but yeah, that's an application of red light therapy. So
would that one be, you know, there's the kind of the guys that sun their perineum and those kind of things and get that UVA, UVB directly from the sun. Is that an equivalent or it's a completely different wavelength of red light? My wife just she uses like what looks like, do you remember the man in the iron mask? She has a mask one that literally just glows red that she uses for collagen production and wrinkle reduction and all, and on her neck and stuff like that. So I don't think she'll let me use that for the other purpose. That would be
you have to clean it. Clean it real thoroughly.
But I'm curious about whether or not, you know, are there particular wavelengths? I have an IR sauna that I use down in my basement that is both heat related and IR, but I don't know if it's the right wavelength or not.
So the red light therapy devices feed you the wavelengths that you get also from the sun. So if you could suntan that part of the body every day for 10 minutes, then you'd be getting probably about the same effect. Mm. But yeah, there's four primary therapeutic red light therapy frequencies, which the major devices all carry. And the thing that's nice about red light therapy is that the clinical science that's been done has been done primarily on these four wavelengths. And so if you are using those four wavelengths, then you can expect that you're going to respond in a way somewhat similar to the subjects in the clinical trials. Whereas when you're talking about supplements or pharmaceutical interventions, it's a little bit of a question mark as to whether you are getting the exact same form or the same quality of supplement that was used in those clinical trials. So when you're dealing with someone that's totally unacquainted to biohacking, when you're dealing with someone who is kind of a normie and they kind of just do what their doctor recommends and they're super skeptical of everything else, the red light therapy has really unassailable scientific evidence. And I really like it too, because as I delve into the PubMed studies and the research on different anti-aging supplements, what I see really consistently is that red light therapy has effects and mechanisms or downstream mechanisms that are often very similar to what you will get from anti-aging supplements that are going to cost you $50, $60, $70 a month, whereas a red light therapy device is going to cost several hundred dollars, and then you can use it every single day for years. We've had that thing for about 5 years now, and it still works perfectly.
And that's why you want to, that's really probably why you want to buy from a high quality source, because if it's, you want to make sure that they're actually, that it's actually, and there's almost no way to verify this unless you've got a spectrometer or something like, you know, light spectrometer, but you, by buying from higher quality people, you're going to get something that they actually can verify the wavelength, because that, you know, that's where the technology comes in, right? Like, you don't want to buy some cheapo thing off of AliExpress and you know, you may not get the right white light wavelength, excuse me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, and you want something that's tested for the EMFs that it puts out, because if it's like bathing you in EMFs while you're doing your red light therapy, then that's not great. So red light therapy is one of my favorite things, and I also really like the PMF, pulsed electromagnetic field therapy. And that is these devices that you put on your body. And what they do is essentially they just feed your body some more topically in specific locations. They feed your body a little bit more, some more electrons, a little bit more electricity. And for example, earlier, it was last year. Last year, my wife developed a dental thing, and one of her teeth was really killing her. And she went and saw the dentist a couple times, two, three times. And the dentist gave her some painkillers for it. And the painkillers were not working. She was still in a lot of pain. And so I turned to my PMF device, or this is what happened, was as soon as she had the problem, I gave her the PMF device and it didn't actually work very well. But then I looked through, there's a database of frequencies that comes with a PMF device I use. It's from a company called Infopathy. And they had some Rife frequencies that were specifically for dental pain issues. And she started using those, and they assuaged the pain in about 10, 15 minutes. And she had to hold the thing like on her face for, it was about 2 days, but it ended up assuaging the pain. And otherwise she would have really been suffering for several days with it. So yeah, I'm a real big fan of PMF.
What's the biological response how does that work? In other words, anecdotally, obviously she put it on there, it relieved the pain, but is there some sort of biology that happens from result of the pulse magnetic field that's happening?
Yeah. So it feeds your body a little bit more electricity in a specific spot so that your body is a little bit more empowered to heal itself. And then this device, like I said, it has a database of a bunch of different frequencies. And I understand this is a little bit into the woo-woo territory, and these different frequencies. Well, these different frequencies work on the entrainment principle that when your body is exposed to different frequencies, your body will get into sync with those frequencies. This is why, like when you're cuddling in bed with your wife at night, your hearts put out this electromagnetic field. And when you're cuddling together, your two electromagnetic fields are going to sync up. And this is part of the reason why cuddling is great, why it increases intimacy. So it's an entrainment effect. And I will also use this, sometimes I will attach my PMF device to the back of my head. And then I will beam an alpha wave, beta wave, gamma wave, delta wave into the back of my head, into my corpus callosum. And this will change my state, because something like a delta is like real relaxed and sedating. But if I want to read a book like Antifragile or Atlas Shrugged, then I want to be really focused. So I would be using something like an alpha wave for that. So yeah, it's the electricity plus the entrainment principle to simplify the mechanism behind those.
And that's kind of the idea, I guess, behind those magnetic bracelets and all of that stuff, right? But although those likely don't have enough, I mean, are those basically just junk? You know, with the I've never used them, but obviously they, you know, the marketing was there. They got pretty popular for a while.
I think those are, it's probably a lot of placebo.
Yeah.
It's probably a lot of placebo there. And we shouldn't disregard things just because of the placebo effect, because there are hundreds of thousands of double-blind clinical studies, the gold standard of science, totaling tens of millions of human participants, proving with the gold standard of science that belief is very, very powerful, that belief can cure depression, cure cancer, fix shoddy knees. So yeah, I would say those kinds of things, I have not investigated them, but I would say they're probably a placebo, but perhaps not a waste of money.
Yeah, for sure. It's interesting that you say that, because so my wife's been having a little bit of back issue. We did a 10K run and just tightness and all that. But we have a friend of ours that's a physical therapist. And when we went, she did needling. And needling, if you don't know, is a little bit like acupuncture, but it's far deeper. It's directly into the muscle. It's into the muscle fiber. And basically what it does is it causes the muscle to contract and then relax as a result of the needle. But I asked her, I said, how did they figure this out? And it was basically, they were doing injections, and I can't remember what exactly the drug was. I don't know if it was corticosteroids or something like that, where they were injecting people with needles, obviously, in order to see whether or not this particular chemical worked. And the placebo was just water. And they figured out that the needle itself was the actual mechanism in which that it caused the muscle pain to go away. And so, you know, they figured out that the acupuncture needles versus a big, huge lancet type needle is much more effective. But to your point, the placebo effect can sometimes be just as good as anything, or even better, because there's no side effects, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So if there's ways that you can yield the placebo effect, and for men, we tend to be rational, or we should be rational. And so my urging to people is to if they have a health issue that they're trying to address, or if they're looking to just max themselves out a little bit more, the supplements that they take and the modalities that they try, do research on those things. Get into PubMed, do the reading on those sorts of things, because the research that you do will up the level of belief that you're going to have in what you're using. And you never really know when you're using a drug or a supplement how much of the effect is the placebo effect. But I think that you can hack that by educating yourself a bit more going into it.
Yeah, for sure. And are there, so you have the technology side, that's mainly the red light or PMF that you talked about. Are there other technologies? You know, we're still kind of in that biohack 101 explanation, but are there other technologies that you recommend? Are those kind of the two main ones that are mostly accessible to the average Joe?
Sure. I'll share one of my favorites that's actually really affordable is dual NBAC brain training. And so this is a little game that you can play on your smartphone. And it's the one brain training task that is demonstrated to have transfer effects to your working memory and your executive control capacities in life in general. There's a lot of different brain training apps out there, a bunch of games out there. Mm-hmm. I've experimented with several of them, and a lot of them just make you better at the game itself. But Dual and Back is the one that has transfer effects. And it will also, or at least a scientist that had done a lot of research on this, who I interviewed twice, his claim was that doing Dual and Back training for about a month would actually increase your IQ. And I have certainly noticed it's a task where basically you have a little grid on a screen, and you have a little block that jumps around the screen into random positions. And in each position, it'll give you a little audio cue. Like it'll say 2, 7, 9, 8, a random audio cue. And then you need to remember when it was one position back from where it was, and also remember what the audio cue was, and you mark it when it's a spatial match or an auditory match. And when you get to when you get to 80-90% accuracy, it takes you to the next level from NBAC 2 to NBAC 3 to NBAC 4. And thereby, what it's doing essentially is upgrading the RAM of your conscious mind. It's exercising your conscious mind to hold on to and process more information at any given moment. And so I've noticed with that when I'm doing that brain training reel consistently, when I'm working on like a web development task, and I've got like 10 different browser tabs open, and I am trying to find the right piece of syntax to put someplace, I will be remembering exactly where I'm putting things and what I'm doing, and I won't have to refer back to my project management flowchart on it. And so it makes me better at that focus. And then Dual and Back also makes you a little bit more icy emotionally. Mm. It makes you more like level emotionally, because it has this effect where it diminishes like emotional impulsivity. So when I'm using that, like when there's some little thing with my wife or whatever, or someone else that like upsets me, I have just a bit more of a reserve of like objectivity and impartiality, to where I'm not going to like say and do something real rash. Mm. So Dual and Back is, yeah, that's been a big hack for me in like the web development department, and also in the relationships department.
Oh, that is interesting. Yeah. That's, my family accuses me. First of all, they accuse me of being a robot. But they accuse me, I for some reason have the ability to pull, it's, I have like my own card catalog in my brain. And so for whatever reason, God given kind of memory level, to where I can pull out these card catalog entries pretty rapidly. So it'd be interesting for me, which means I have tons of random facts that I can just remember. And so I just have an excellent memory, but not photographic or anything like that. But it would be interesting to try the Dual Impact stuff and see whether or not I can actually improve that and or have better recall, more efficient recall, or anything like that.
Yeah, it might, because the way long-term memory, where you have long-term and short-term memory, and so your short-term day-to-day memories, these things get transferred into long-term memory when we are sleeping. And so this is why sleep hacks, things like the red light, are really important. And memory goes through this consolidation, reconsolidation process. The memory gets drawn back into our working conscious memory, and then is brought back into our long-term memory. And so the dual end back, they're okay. I've not seen science on this, but I would hypothesize that it would help some with semantic episodic recall, because it does optimize the working memory and the executive control. So yeah, you should try it for about 20 days. It's not a thing like meditation that you have to do for months and months and months for it to really benefit you. If you, in the science that's done on it, they had people doing about 10, 15 minutes of dual end back training for 20 days or for a month. And that produced measurable gains in cognitive abilities that were sustained with like a minimum of ongoing training. So yeah, it's one of those things that can like upgrade your mind with a minimum of effort compared with all the other personal development transformational modalities out there.
Yeah, there's no, you know, that's very little, doesn't take very much. It seems like it's something, it's, you know, that's kind of how musculature works. It actually takes very little effort to maintain. Once you can lift a certain amount, it takes very little effort to actually be able to continue to lift that amount. There's different studies that are out there with that, but it sounds very similar. So you do a lot of, you know, you just said over 200. You remind me a little bit of Tim Ferriss, right? Tim Ferriss is a big one on self experimentation, I guess. So I'm sure that he's someone that you, I don't know how you feel about his methodologies and what he does, but you know, beyond the technology side of things, you do a lot. And let me just, here's the disclaimer for this episode, right? We're not physicians. We've not been recommending anything in specific that you go buy and take. You know, you should use your own judgment and don't hold us accountable, basically. Use at your own risk, right? But, you know, how does the biohacking work from a chemical standpoint? I know you've got, you know, nicotine and nootropics and all of these different things, but can you, and then I'll ask you a very specific question about that, but can you kind of run through some of that stuff for us?
Sure. So the nootropics are usually boosting neurotransmitters, typically acetylcholine. That's the mechanism by which most of them work, which gives us more focus, which gives us more motivation, which gives us a greater problem solving capacity. So yeah, I would say the acetylcholine pathway is the one many of them use. Some of them will work on dopamine, and that can be kind of interesting, because boosting your dopamine is really a way of up-leveling the motivation that you have. There's a very popular smart drug. It's called modafinil. Have you heard of that one by chance?
No.
Okay. It's the military grade smart drug. They give it to, there was some studies famously done with F-117 stealth fighter pilots, and along with combat helicopter pilots. And you can imagine like a combat helicopter pilot, they can't exactly like put the helicopter in autopilot. They have to be like alert and in control of the helicopter for 10, 15, 16, 17 hours on a mission. And so they would give them modafinil. And modafinil was originally developed as an anti-narcolepsy drug. And so it essentially makes us just really awake. And it will give you a lot of motivation. And if you've got something like a web development task, some sort of technical task, it'll give you a huge reserve of brain power for that. But it's a very problematic smart drug. That one is pretty far from what I recommend to people, despite its popularity, because it is I was talking with another biohacker, and he described it as an anti-empathy drug.
Yeah, that's not, which I mean, that would be good in military applications, right? That's the, you know, that's much needed in a military operation, but in general life,
great,
that would
great
be bad
for war.
Yeah. Right.
But yeah, when I do modafinil, and I do it infrequently these days, I think it gives me kind of like a psychopath's mind, because I find that any social situation that I'm in, even something like talking with the cashier at the grocery store, I will be like meta-analyzing this like chessboard in my mind of the interaction. And I'll be saying, how can I appear normal to the fellow human being here?
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what psychopaths go through. So so something like modafinil is going to boost dopamine. And that can be, there's people like modafinil got really popular in Silicon Valley with these people that are working like 20 hours a day to try to build the newest application that Google will buy for $1 billion. And I'm also, to switch categories, there's a category that I am a really big fan of, which is the adaptogens. And so these are an herbal category. And these are herbs that have a holistic, that I think as far as like the holistic effect, this is the best category. So something like rhodiola is a real classic nootropic. It's going to wake you up. In fact, I've used it as a coffee alternative a bunch of times. It's going to wake you up. It's going to give you more energy. It's going to brighten your mood. In the adaptogens category, there's the adaptogenic mushrooms, which I'm pleased with how popular those have gotten recently.
Is that like the mud water coffee that they, isn't that mushroom based? I think they have, there's a brand out there that talks about
Four Sigmatic.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a big fan of those mushrooms will work on the immune system. In fact, we used a specific, we got HPV, or to be more accurate, I got HPV and gave it to her. Okay. Oh, okay. And then then this is a problem you got to deal with, right? And so if you Google like HPV, they're going to tell you there's no cure. You're screwed for life, you dirty little slut, you. but I went into PubMed and looked deeper into the science, and there's a particular mushroom called Cariolis versicolor or turkey tail. And this mushroom had all these clinical studies showing clearance of HPV. Mm. And so we started using that, and it's really not something that we need to worry about anymore. So yeah, so those mushrooms can be great for immunity. And then there's some sedating adaptogens like reishi. There's reishi, Panax ginseng. Those are probably the best sedating mushrooms. So those are going to relax you after your day of being a maxed out man. And then there's maybe my favorite adaptogen, which is horny goat weed. Have you tried that one?
Yeah, I have actually. And I don't know if I did it right. I don't know if there was a minimum effective dose issue or whatever, but it didn't seem to do anything for me. So educate me on that. Maybe I didn't do it right.
Yeah, you might not have taken enough, because it's one of those that you can up the dose quite a bit higher than what's on the packaging.
Because it's it's water soluble, right? Not fat soluble, I think is that typically is the differentiator between take as much as you want versus take, you know, be more concerned about toxicity.
Yeah. With horny goat weed, I make a tea. I make it as a tea. And with those herbs, often you will get more of an acute experiential effect from them when you take it as a tea. So I make me and Mrs. Roseland a strong horny goatweed tea before sexy time. And I do think it's had an effect of making her orgasms more intense and more frequent. So it's a pleaser for
because it's sold as a libido enhancer, experience enhancer, right? Those are kind of the big things that it's kind of purported to do,
and it'll boost testosterone. Also. Okay. So it's something that you can take every day for a little bit of an uptick in testosterone, and then take more when on date night.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Give that one another try. Maybe you got bunk stuff, because with these herbs, you want to make sure that your vendor is providing a COA, a certificate of analysis, with a spectroscopy from an accredited American or European lab that is showing that the assay conforms, showing that it's pure stuff. Because, if you're just going on Amazon or picking up something from the vitamin cottage, you might get really bunk stuff.
Yeah, because you're going to pay, you're going to pay quite a bit more for really good stuff, right? Is that kind of the rule of thumb? The cheaper stuff is not really the, can you trust it cheaper? I'm just trying to get kind of a generalized idea.
The COA is, I think, the most important thing to look for as a consumer.
Okay. Yeah. So that's super important. So you got, what nootropics? Nootropics is kind of the big buzzword now, right? And is that there? I assume there's like a whole subset of nootropics. We talked a little bit about the technology side. You talked about some of the military side. Is there something that you recommend from a nootropic standpoint? So basically we can break it down like this. So I'm a 50-year-old guy. I eat pretty good. I exercise all the time. I'm a 6.5 hour guy, regardless of that's just tends to be my maximum. And I feel good with that. I use too much caffeine usually. But symptomatically we've got, as we get to be in my age, you've got prostate issues, typically have, nearsighted or a farsightedness, your eyes start to go bad. So kind of what would you recommend for someone like me for getting started kind of down this road, whether it be nootropics or eye health or prostate health or any of these biohacking things that might kind of, again, maximize me physically and emotionally and mentally?
Sure. So eye health, I'm going to circle back to I've got a bunch of cool hacks there. In the nootropics department, I would love for you to try the racetams. And the racetams are not quite as well known. This is a category of, they are pharmaceutical molecules. They're not nutraceuticals, but they're a class of pharmaceuticals that has underwent pretty impressive scientific study and research. The original racetam, which is the one that I think is the best, is piracetam. And this one was developed, I think, in the 1960s. And it has undergone 500 or 600 human clinical studies, including including population studies. There's like a little town in France full of old people, and they like gave this whole town piracetam for 20 years and then did a follow-up analysis of how the people were doing. And so piracetam was originally developed as like a anti-cognitive decline drug, as something to combat Alzheimer's, dementia, etc. But it has it has a brilliant effect as a smart drug. It will, it's one of these things that starts, that for most people, it starts working right away. And it makes you more focused and energetic. It gives you a sense of like optimism about whatever you are, about whatever you're working on. Like you're really ready to take on the challenge of the day when you're on paracetam. And then it has this interesting effect after about 10 days, 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, maybe a month of usage, where your semantic and episodic long-term memory opens up to you more. And you'll start to, you'll remember like odd things from childhood, or you'll remember books that you read in high school, or pieces of foreign language vocabulary from ages ago. And there's a bunch of different nootropics have effects on memory. Like ginseng has pretty good clinical evidence on memory. But in my experience, and I've talked with hundreds and hundreds of biohackers over the years, paracetam is the one that most consistently upgrades people's memory. That's like when people are saying, oh, I'd like to improve my memory. I tell them, and there's a bunch of course, with memory, there's a bunch of products out there. If you go on Amazon and you say memory support, it's going to give you a bunch of products that are like a ginseng and something else. But when in my experience, if you want to upgrade memory, you turn to paracetam, dual NBAC training, and using mnemonics. Okay, so to get back to your question, if people want to dive into the nootropics world, but they don't want to waste their time, my recommendation is to go with the racetams, because those are they're over the course of the science done on them, they're demonstrated as being remarkably safe as far as pharmaceuticals go. And they tend to work pretty quickly. They tend to give you more motivation and brain power pretty quickly, often within 30 or 40 minutes of dosing. And with the paracetam is not the only one. There's several others that are in that family. Oxiracetam, which I call the discipline molecule, it's not as stimulatory, but it just gives you more discipline to be doing the things you know you should be doing and not doing the things that you shouldn't be doing. And then there's another one called aniracetam that a lot of people respond really well to. And then there's one called phenylparacetam, which I call the mathematician's smart drug because it increases mathematics aptitude. So I've noticed when I was on phenylparacetam and doing brain training games that were mathematic in nature, I noticed an uptick in my scores on that. So I recommend the racetams, the adaptogens, and then one that you've already mentioned a couple of times, which is nicotine. Nicotine can be a pretty brilliant smart drug. I call nicotine the creativity drug, because Ayn Rand, Tolstoy, Dostoevsky, Mark Twain, the iconic, the greatest authors, were almost all voracious smokers. And that's because, nicotine will just give you quite the reserve of creativity. But the issue with nicotine is that it is addictive, of course. And so I, of course, don't advise that people smoke or vape. I think vaping is maybe a little bit less destructive than smoking is, but it is still really not very good for us. I recommend that in the nicotine department that people use some of the, there's a company in the States called Lucy that does a clean nicotine gum product. There's another company called Trescriptions that has an interesting product that combines it with methylene blue, which will turn your mouth really, really blue, but that'll really fire up your neurons. So I recommend that people use nicotine, but that they do it cyclically. That in life, we're going to kind of have these coasting periods and these sprinting periods. Mm-hmm. And probably right now, in the beginning of the year, probably a lot of guys are getting into a sprinting period where they have like, they're trying to start a new business or write a book or start a new company, or they want to do a bunch of prepping so that we can survive the coming apocalypse. So if you're getting into a sprinting period of life, and especially if you need some creativity for something, do like a 30, 60 or 90 day cycle on nicotine, and it will multiply you. It'll multiply you quite a bit. So yeah. So if people want to dive into nootropics, but they don't want to waste their time trying a bunch of different products, yeah, I'd say adaptogens, racetams, and maybe using nicotine if they don't have a addictive kind of personality.
Because have they studied the addictive cycle for nicotine? I just watched this documentary on Netflix about Juul and how they were delivering like 2.5 times as much nicotine as that they were as a typical cigarette. So that's, you know, they basically, and their marketing tactics and all that, they basically addicted like, you know, half the population of kids under 18. But is there like, I tend to have a little bit of an addictive personality. I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't do any of those things. One of the reasons, because my parents are drug addicts, alcoholics, and all that. But is there kind of this, I understand the cycling aspect of it, but like if you're saying, okay, 90 days, I feel like that 90 days for some people would be like you're fully addicted and then have to go cold turkey. Kind of how does that cycle look, and what has the study shown about that?
Sure. Well, the self-awareness is real important there. So with me, I'm blessed with not an addictive personality. So I have no problem with doing it for 60 days and then going off of it cold turkey. And if I do a little bit of a tapering strategy, I don't even really have a withdrawal from it. But if there, yeah, for, it's probably something that you should stay away from.
Yeah.
Or what some people will do is they'll use it very infrequently. Mm. They'll use it once or twice a week before something that they really need creative power for. So if you're going to do something like a sales presentation, then that would be the kind. So yeah, it would kind of come down to the individuals understanding a little bit what their kind of personality is.
And yeah, I mean, it's not like meth, right? Meth is the whole, you know, not even like the ability of meth to get you addicted is pretty high, because I guess it has like, it's a diminishing effect after the first hit. It's a diminishing effect over time. So that's why people constantly chase that initial hit. So it's not like that, but it you know, it's definitely I like the self-awareness aspect of that for sure.
I did meth once and I breakdanced alone in a basement. Never again. But then I had no desire after that.
Yeah. I'm not an experimental drug kind of guy. Like I just don't do them. So, but I separate that with, you know, in terms of supplements and those kind of things. Like I don't really take a lot of them, but I'm interested in the science of it and different effects and kind of those kind of aspects of it. So this stuff is super interesting.
Sure. So you were asking about eyesight biohacks, which is, that's actually super important because we all spend so much of our time these days staring at glowing rectangular screens. Mm-hmm. And that is really not good for our eyes. And people might be wondering about my crossed eye. And that is not caused by the nootropics or any of the biohacking things that I've done. That is just the way that I was born. And I'm looking forward to in the future when nerve repair technology gets a little bit better and I might be able to fix that. Mm. But with eyes, there's a couple of pretty good eye hacks that I've found. One is using the blue light blockers. Have you seen those?
I had another guest not too long ago, and he actually uses those every night. He and his wife use them quite often, and that, so they wear them at night. They can still be on their phones or watch TV or whatever, but by using those, it really helps with that. So explain what those are, though.
Yeah, so I'll grab mine. Yep. And so they're glasses, orange tinted glasses that filter out some of the blue light that we are getting hit with on our computers. And of course, the advice that you hear is just avoid using your tablet or your smartphone for 2, 3, 4 hours before bed. And this is just not practical advice that very many people are going to follow. So mm-hmm. I think using blue blockers in the evening is real smart, and it will result in better sleep. And then let's see, there's another product that I really like for eyesight, which is pretty affordable. I don't have it right now. It's called a Visomitin, and it's mitochondrial eye drops. Okay. So it's eye drops that contain the SKQ1 molecule, and the SKQ1 molecule delivers a targeted mitochondrial antioxidant. And so it targets the mitochondria specifically. And then your eyes have one of the highest concentrations of mitochondria in your body. And that mitochondria gets worn out with a long day of looking at glowing screens. And so these Visomitin eye drops, I would use these in the evening, and they would work wonders to relieve eye strain after a long day of IT mm-hmm. slavery. And then they have the ROS buildup, the reactive oxygen species buildup in our eyes. This is something that over time causes cataracts, that causes decline, it causes all sorts of problems. And these Visomitin eye drops address that, and they do it very affordably. Although it was a Russian product. Mm. So if you want to get it these days, you're going to have to break out an untraceable cryptocurrency right. wallet. And I have a website where I do, actually, I need to double check that they can get that to North America at this time. But yeah, those that particular product made my eyes a lot happier.
That's interesting. Yeah, because I've got my I don't wear them while I'm doing the podcast, but these are my progressives, basically, because when I got about 45, and I've spent the last 25 years on the computer, my eyes just start to get tired, and my vision is just, it's age related, but it's also just a matter of spending too much time on looking at, like you said, glowing glowing screen. So I'm interested in trying whatever I can to help that. It was ironic because my wife made fun of me because my eyes, and we're basically the same age. She's about 6 months younger. She made fun of me because my eyes started to go bad. And then hers progressed far more quickly in going, you know, to less eyesight than mine did. Of course, she'd had LASIKs and those kind of things. But eyesight is one of those things that it's just annoying when you get a little bit, when you start to get into your 40s and 50s and beyond.
Let's see. One of the adaptogens, Scissandra, is supposed to have a positive effect on eyesight. I didn't really notice much of an effect. Scissandra is this really lovely herb. It's beautiful. I'll put a picture of it on my website through the link. It's this beautiful herb, and then it has this awesome taste. It's called a 5-flavor taste. And then it's a subtle nootropic, and it's also a libido booster. So that's like those adaptogens just do a lot of good things for us.
That's great. Yeah, the libido boosting stuff is interesting because there's so much kind of snake oil out there that talks about that. You know, a lot of our audience is in their 40s, 50s, and that kind of thing. And for guys, you know, we have kind of an easy solution, which is TRT, right? Testosterone replacement therapy, which is kind of, you know, a little bit of a magic bullet. And I don't know if that would be considered, it's not really considered a biohack necessarily, but, you know, for women, however, yes, they can do some testosterone boosters, but then they get all the fun little things like facial hair and all these different, you know, aspects of doing testosterone. So the libido boosting thing is interesting to me to help, you know, to be kind of have men help their wives and partners, you know, with some of that stuff.
Did you ever get into the tantric stuff?
I have a little bit, you know, I've studied it somewhat. Not deeply, in other words. I know that you put that in your bio. And so the tantric stuff is definitely an interesting, you know, and that's a whole other podcast, but that is definitely an interesting aspect of what can be done.
Yeah. I think that's a pretty awesome technology that we have within us to, as men, to retain a bit more of our male essence and power, and to focus our sexual energies more, and to increase the intimacy in relationships. So that's something that's really enriched our life quite a bit. So it's something that I recommend pretty enthusiastically, really to men of any age. But I do understand that there's, with every relationship has kind of its, the bedroom is the one place where you don't want to push the comfort zone too much.
Right.
Right.
Open and honest communication. That's a big one, you know, for sure.
So it's not for everyone, but for me, I enjoy the full body orgasm experience that I think any man can experience with some practice of the tantric techniques. I enjoy having the option in my head of saying, okay, we're going to make love, but I'm not going to ejaculate. I'm going to keep that energy in me so that I can, I don't know, maybe we're having sexy time during the day and I got work to do, or maybe I've got like an important thing going on the next day. And with about 20 days of practicing those tantric techniques, men will have that as an option. Which I think that's a really cool thing. It fits in really well with the rest of all of these kinds of hacks, in my view.
That's definitely something that, you know, whether it's semen retention or, you know, tantric and all of these different avenues that I think are a little bit taboo. We don't talk a lot about them. You know, we do something very similar, kind of very simple, which is we have a massage table in our room. And so she, I'll do full body 75 minute massages, you know, and then sometimes what and we joke and we say, you know, sometimes she takes advantage of our extra services as part of that. It's, but, you know, and so, but that's kind of that energy flow and, you know, that connection and that relaxation and all of those kind of things. So that's definitely something worth exploring for sure. So, well, I want to be respectful of your time, and I know you wanted to share with us, and this will be kind of a monologue on your part, but I know you wanted to share with us something in particular about kind of, you know, the state of manhood and why it's good to be a man right now. So if you're, you know, feel free to add anything else in the meantime, but I'd love for you to share that with the audience as well.
Sure. First, I got a question for you, because you have been married quite a bit longer than
28 years. We've been actually, it was 28 years in July. So 28 and a half, quote unquote.
Okay. I'm going to avail myself of your wisdom on something that's baffling me about life with women. What is the purpose of white tablecloths?
You know, we have white sheets on our bed, and we've talked about why they use, and we have vacation rentals. And the purpose of using white versus other colors is that I think that they're easier to clean because you can always bleach them. And so, you know, they're clean. So I don't know if it's a cleanliness thing. That's with our sheets. We've talked about doing different colored sheets and all that, but you know, that's the ease of sheets. I don't know about tablecloths in particular, but that'll be my guess.
Uh-huh. Okay. I've been here over Christmas. We had a white tablecloth and it just got dirty. And then they were perturbed about the white tablecloth being dirty. I was like, why do we even have this thing?
Yeah, we don't use tablecloths very often at our house. We will on special occasions, but honestly, my wife's favorite is like a green. So, you know, we're not a big white tablecloth family around here.
Green makes more sense. There was this really woo-woo biohacking podcast I was listening to where they were saying that green is the fertility color. That if a woman is wearing green and if you got a lot of green around, it's going to have a fertility.
Interesting. Effect. Is that how we got the whole green M&M myth also? Do you ever heard of that? So there's this there's like this myth when we were younger where evidently green M&Ms are the aphrodisiac M&Ms. So there's completely no truth that whatever, but maybe it has to do with the color green.
Sure. We've figured it out, Kevin. Okay. Yeah. So I have got a message about why 2024 is the best time to be a man, even though it may seem like it's kind of an awful time to be a man. So I'll grab the essay that I did on this. All right. The aeriform digital realm of the manosphere is sometimes characterized as a monosphere because thoughtful men have a lot of complaints about modernity, about the appalling state of Western civilization, the bias and impediments we face in the contemporary workplace, the dumbing down of society, retarded woke culture, the leftist politics wrecking our countries, and of course, the fallen state of the modern single woman. Having been steeped in manosphere content for at least a decade while living in seven different countries, I've reached the surprising conclusion that it's the best time to be a man. And that might sound crazy. Look at how hard it is to get a good job, keep up with the cost of living, meet a nice girl, stay healthy, and raise a family these days, you might say. And you're right. But I think that a man, philosophically, should compare to the ideal and to the average. And in the final calculus, lean more towards the latter than the former. If you honestly compare life as a modern man in the roaring train wreck of the 2020s to any other era, it becomes clear that today, more than in any other era, you have more freedom to architect the life you want. Compare, and you'll start to liberate yourself from the victim mindset that the state of society is holding you back. If I were a man like myself in the 1980s or the 1990s, maybe I could have made more money in the booming economy, but there was no easy to find red pill knowledge about women. So I probably would have simply married the prettiest girl willing to sleep with me repeatedly. And then she would have probably gotten overweight from eating the toxic mainstream standard American diet. We would have gotten divorced, and then I would have lost a bunch of that money I'd made, along with my kids. Maybe. If I were a man in the 1960s or 70s, watching mankind's greatest leap on black and white television would have been very special. But then I'd get drafted and go get a hard case of PTSD in Vietnam. In the 1970s, the economy was dog shit. And the culture was deeply degenerate. This would have either ensnared me or corrupted whatever woman I ended up with. What about the 1950s? It would have been pretty sweet to afford a brand new home, a new car, a dutiful stay-at-home wife, and yearly family vacations on my salary. But then my kids would grow up, go to college on my dime, and become corrupted by the burgeoning cultural Marxist movements that I would have not known to warn them about. What about the 1930s or the 1940s? Well, the Great Depression would have made the modern economy look like Zurich, Switzerland. Then I would get drafted to go fight in World War II. What about the 1910s or 20s? If I managed to not get my face blown off in a trench in World War I or taken out by the Spanish flu, well, swing dancing to jazz in the roaring 20s would have been spanky. And in any other era, yeah, maybe it would have been easier to meet a nice, marriageable maiden, but almost everything else about life sucked. You would have had less human and civil rights. Options for personal and economic edification were next to non-existent. Your work would have been unending, backbreaking labor. Life would have been, in two words, tedious and tiresome. And you could be forced to go fight and die in some brutal war. You might think that guys in other historical eras had better sex lives with better women. But historically, less than 50% of men actually got the chance to reproduce. Many men simply never got to have sex because kings and warlords hoarded women in harems. In relatively recent European society, unless you achieve some success, no patriarch would give you his daughter's hand in marriage. In any era, a man's life is rife with struggle and challenge. And in their relative absence, we get weak men who make for bad times. But only in modernity is that struggle and challenge overcome with the habitual rejection of comfort, which will launch you on an invigorating odyssey of personal transformation that makes you happier, healthier, and freer. In any other era, which you are photoshopping the smallpox scars out of in your fantasies, you would have had just as many challenges holding you back from a good life, but they would have almost certainly been things that you were powerless to affect. And you would have been totally bereft of the knowledge and tools that the modern man has for reclaiming his sovereignty. I wouldn't want to have been born at any other time than 1985.
Nice. That's super interesting, because it's easy to argue that now we're living in one of the toughest times, but honestly, it's not, not true in the least. So that's, I think that's a great place to land the plane, as Mike Rowe always talks about. So give me that website again. How do we find you? How do we learn more about you? And I know you said that there'll be some links to some of the things that we talked about there on that page as well.
Sure thing. LimitlessMindset.com/maxed out. And
awesome.
Yeah, I'll itemize everything here that I talked about. And then guys can hit me up with whatever questions that they got.
That's perfect. Hey, Jonathan, I really appreciate you taking the time. Super informative. And I'll have to, maybe I'll investigate and try some of this stuff, and then we'll have to have a follow-up to see how it went for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure thing.
Awesome. Enjoy the rest of your night.
See you later, Kevin.
If you're looking to really maximize your life and become the man you were made to be, head over to maxedoutman.com and get your journey started today.